Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross hanging out once again because, well, it's what we do best. And Rob Ross, how's everything going in New York?
Not too bad. You know, it did in fact turn into autumn overnight.
Same here.
Today was a day where I actually had socks on for the first time in 4 months, and more importantly, a jacket. And I needed that jacket going to and coming home from work because it's a nice chilly windiness out there. And it's kind of a weird thing because just the other day it was humid and oppressive and draggy, as was last week. And here we are. And yeah, it's late September. This is how it ought to be.
Right. You know? Right. Exactly. And I mean, this is what I remember from childhood. So yeah, it was nice that it finally turned here as well. We had a really nice weekend, low humidity, cool temperatures. And that was followed by today, which was mostly overcast. And it was foggy, but it wasn't that sick, you know, midsummer 90 degrees, but it's still, you know, that moist fog. It was just nice. It was the kind of windows down, T-tops off or sunroof open and music cranked kind of day.
Well, here it was also overcast, but they're calling for rain. So that's coming tonight. But tomorrow's supposed to be somewhere in the 70s. So I hope not. Certainly was today. Today was a day where you actually felt awake. That's a good way to put it. And Mondays is usually a tough day for most people. But here we are. We're doing the show, and I actually feel like I'm present. You know, I don't feel that. Okay, I got to work myself into that mindset of being energetic enough to deliver. You know, I feel pretty good.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that because after listening back to last week's show, I was here and I was here upstairs, but the voice just wasn't there. So my apologies for that. But getting back into some kind of relative shape as far as all of that's concerned. And you know, the other throwback to our kidhood was that a certain gentleman from Liverpool, England, entered the album charts at number one this week.
And that happened. I got that news as soon as we ended last week's show. But yeah, Paul McCartney entered the charts with Egypt Station for the first time in his solo career. That's his first entry at number one. It's also his first number one album in 36 years since, naturally, Tug of War.
Yes. Which all deserved it. Just what an incredible piece of work.
You got that right. It astounds me, it amazes me, and it thrills me beyond words to see 76-year-old Paul McCartney enter the charts at number one simply by virtue of the fact that it's real music played by real musicians, and I don't care how old they are. We're talking about Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And this isn't just some gratuitous thing where it's like, oh, he doesn't have the voice anymore. You have to keep things in perspective, people, because that's the one thing I keep hearing everyone moaning about. He's 76 years old. He's not going to be able to sit there and go, woo, like he used to.
Exactly.
He just isn't there. But the fact that this album got across to get him a number one entry, that's huge.
Yeah.
And I do. Huge with a capital H-U-G-E, not Y-U-G-E.
Well, and the good thing about it, I mean, from where I'm sitting is that it hasn't been, I mean, I know, you know, we talked about this a little bit last time around, the fact that, you know, Egypt Station is an album very much of itself. It's a couple of corners turned for Paul McCartney, but it goes back in a lot of ways to his pop roots. But I liked New, and I don't know what the reviews were. I don't really pay that much attention. I thought it was a good, solid record, not as a McCartney record, but just as an effort. I enjoyed it, and I could understand the direction where it was going. So for that album to do nowhere near as well as this one has done already in just its first week of release, I think really says something about the quality of Egypt Station as an album, as a piece of work.
Well, it's funny because the last time I saw / heard / read people getting, quote, excited about a McCartney album, well, there were two of them, but more so with Flaming Pie.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one that people were kind of, ooh, he's back kind of vibe about it. But it really didn't do anything or go anywhere. And then the next album, Chaos and Creation in the Backyard, was getting a lot of hype. But I think that was because he was working with the producer who had worked with Radiohead. So that may have been really the draw, because that album didn't do anything either.
Right. And that's the problem. He's had a sling of those that, you know, they could have gotten some notice, but for whatever reason, they just didn't. And I think that a lot of it probably had to do with the fact that they did a tremendous amount of hype, a tremendous amount of buildup on this one that Paul was directly involved in. It was clear, I think, with the, you know, the James Corden thing and everything else, that he really was emotionally invested in this album doing well. Where I think, you know, he kind of gave the impression, going all the way back to the Oratorio, for crying out loud, that he was distancing himself from his own work in a weird way that I think really carried through most of the 90s and most of the 2000s.
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point, because he seemed to be more into it, quote unquote, when he was doing The Fireman.
Yep.
You know, that seemed to get a lot of a lot more airplay than any of the standard McCartney releases. But I think also with this, and I don't know if this really means much of anything, this is his first album on Capitol Records in how many years?
Right.
You know, it's just a very, very strange. Listen, I love the fact that all the pieces of the puzzle fell into place for him. And, you know, look, Flowers in the Dirt was supposed to become the next, almost like the next Band on the Run, the way people were going overboard. I don't know if it was because of the collaboration with Declan McManus or what, but, you know, that wasn't that great of an album. Like I said last week, you know, this one is the song that really stands out for me.
Right.
My Brave Face is, it's okay. I think My Brave Face is actually better than Veronica, but hey, that's just my, you know. I thought the collaboration that McCartney and McManus had done, This Town, was a fantastic track for McManus. Napoleon Dynamite, The Imposter, whatever you want to call him. I'm not going to call him by that name that everybody seems to call him. But also because it had McGuinn on it as well. So you had McGuinn, McCartney, and McManus. And that's a pretty nifty little trio right there.
Yeah, right, a trio of mix. So, yeah, but it is. It's, I mean,
hey guys, folks, because I'm half of them.
I really do. I'm glad to see that this is all pulling together for Paul. And I guess we'll see what happens as far as touring and all of that is concerned. But still, how can you not be happy for somebody in his position right now?
Absolutely. And it just as you know, as an old rock guy, as you are and as I am, you know, it's a thrill to see somebody that we grew up with get that coveted spot.
On that subject.
Something.
Yeah, and on that subject, as a matter of fact, my visit this week on the radio show was with none other than Kenny Loggins. And Kenny Loggins last year did something fairly interesting in Chicago. They did a concert, and it was a sort of a career retrospective that has now been released as a CD and DVD box set that he did with, you know, everybody was there, and that was the best thing about it. The only one who wasn't there was Stevie Nicks, and they had a young lady who sang with him on a couple of tracks who I don't even know who it was. I'd have to go back and check, but she was more than capable. She sounded fantastic, and she made the songs really come alive as well. But Jimmy Messina was there. Michael McDonald was there. And so they really put in the effort to bring together all of the collaborators along the way. And, you know, he did his solo stuff as well. It's out there now as Kenny Loggins and Friends live at the Soundstage. And, you know, the sound quality, obviously, at Soundstage is fantastic. But it's more, I think, about the experience of hearing all of those guys together again and performing that music that, again, was such a major part. And what really comes through for me is that there was never a part of my life, because the Loggins and Messina collaboration, if I'm not mistaken, started in 1968. So along the way, there was never a time when Kenny Loggins wasn't doing something that was getting airplay. And, you know, in through my high school years, it was always there. So, you know, it's kind of cool to see him looking back at everything that made his own career, and the fact that he's still at least handshake friendly with all of the guys who were there helping him along.
You know, I did say this to our beloved D.W. Dunphy earlier, and I'll say the same thing to you. There's never any reason to bring Kenny Loggins into anything.
Not a fan, huh?
No, you know, I want, as Mr. Dunphy tried in vain, but to no avail, to give him a pass because he did write the theme for Caddyshack.
Yep.
You know, with the little gopher dancing to I'm All Right. But that ain't going to cut it because I have one word, and that's Footloose. And there is nothing that will ever make me forgive anybody for that. I don't, you know, if you saw the movie, if you sang the song, and if you dare say My Time to Dance, I'll cut you.
Yeah.
You
know? Well, what about your mama don't dance? I mean, come on.
Daddy don't rock and roll. You know, that's that's Chisola of the 70s. I'm going more on the Jim Messina side because Jim Messina was a member of Poco.
And a member of Buffalo Springfield before that, sure.
Exactly. So he's no slouch. Kenny Loggins, I'm sorry, he's like too new agey for me. You know, that's just me. You know, I actually will give a greater pass to, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, Michael McDonald, because at least he was with the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah.
Granted, he neutered them with What a Fool Believes, and if I ever hear Yamo be there, I'm going to kill somebody.
Well,
I'm going to kill somebody again. I mean, I'm going to if I hear the song again, I'm going to kill.
Yeah.
That will send anybody off into a blind rage.
I give Michael McDonald a pass for a completely different reason. It's for the stuff that he did with Steely Dan. So, you know, again, the solo stuff.
Okay, fair enough. But, you know, to me, of course, I'm always going to think Steely Dan is simply Becker and Fagan.
Becker and Fagan, right. And 87 other guys who just happened to be in the room at the time, yeah.
But, yeah, Kenny Loggins, that just makes me kind of, you know, it's like sucking on a sour lemon. Well, lemon really isn't sour. It's tart. But you get a bad lemon, and you're just going to make that face and go, woo,
you yep. know?
But, hey, listen, I'm still fighting people over the Eagles, you know?
Yeah, you and the dude.
Well, that's what I can't stand. People going on because a friend of mine went to see the Eagles recently, mm-hmm. right? And granted, you and I had this discussion when they said they were going out on tour after the death of Glenn Frey, which I don't agree with by any stretch.
Yeah, no, that's not the Eagles.
There should be no Eagles at this right. point. That's pretty clear. Nevertheless, he went to see them. He said they were fantastic, you know. Everybody dogpiled on him, quoting the dude.
Uh-huh.
It's line from a movie by a fictional character. Do you understand me, people? Fictional character, okay? Am I getting through to you?
You know? Yes. Well, and I'm glad you said that because that was another Facebook argument that I started this week as well, because there has been now a week's worth of hand-wringing over whether Ernie and Bert were gay. Good Lord.
Oh, God's sake.
If I ever give a shit about this, put a bullet in my brain. What I equated it to, and there's been some hand-wringing over this crap again as well, the idea that you can take a fictional character and care about the actor who plays that fictional character. Like, you can't play that character. You don't look the part. You don't look. Who cares? It's fiction. And the day that I care about any of that stuff, and by the way, I don't care what realm we're talking about. Like, the movie 21. A bunch of people bitched about the movie 21 because, in reality, all of the kids who were part of that real thing were all Asian, and they whitewashed them for the movie. At least I can look at that and say, okay, those were real people. I'm still not going to get all that upset about it, but at least you could make the case that they were real human beings. But, you know, I saw Peter Ustinov play Charlie Chan in The Curse of the Spider Woman, and or whatever the name of that movie. I think that was it. And I don't care that it was Peter Ustinov playing an Asian guy. I know that's fallen out of favor now, but it's the same thing with, you know, we can't have a black stormtrooper. Really? Why? Just shut up and watch the movie or don't, you know? But that piece of it, that idea that, you know, the sexuality or the sex or the color or whatever of an actor playing a fictional character is ever an issue, if you think that's an issue, you need a hobby.
Well, that's what gets to me. It's you know, it's people in our age range and older going on and on and on. Oh, I'm with the dude. I'm with the dude. Okay, we get it. You're with the dude. Now, eat a bag of dicks, okay?
Right.
You know, and then they're going into the whole personality thing. At what point does no one already figure out even if you're a fan of the band, that, yeah, Don Henley is a douche.
Yep.
Glenn Frey was a douche. But they made fantastic records. And that's what my friend Dave brought up. He said, you know, I have to be able to separate the person from the music. And I said this exactly a week before about the exact same topic and the exact same band. I have to be able to separate the artist from the art, because if that's the case, my record collection is going to be nil. Probably most of my books would be gone and I'd have no DVDs.
Right.
You know, the whole point is, I don't care. Did the music touch me? Did it entertain me? Are they doing their job? The answer is yes. You know, let's remember something, people. Again, perspective. The Beatles weren't exactly the nicest guys in the world.
No, and apparently they jerked off together. And you know what? I don't care about that either.
Yeah, well, or they, did they jerk each other off? I don't want to know. Paul, I love you. Shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear this ever again. I don't want to hear any more of these little giggly secrets about you and your buddy John. Fuck him, okay? You win, Paul. You won the whole thing.
Right.
You're Sir McCartney, okay? He's just a memory. He's a memory of a balding, old, bitter, pseudo-hippie buying everything in sight, okay? Imagine no possessions, but let me have three floors on the in the Dakota. Okay.
Yeah.
Or canonization of Saint Lennon.
So,
okay.
Which, and you know, that actually brings us very nicely into what's going on right now with Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court nominee, and the fact that, you know, everybody's now focused on what may or may not have happened when he was 15, 16, and 17 years old. And there's a couple of things about this that are really bothering me. Not the least of which, because I will be the only man in America to say, I don't know what happened. I have no idea. I have no opinion on who's right or who's wrong or who's lying or who's telling the truth, because I don't know. And there's no way for me to know. So the last thing I'm going to do is hop on somebody else's shit over their opinion on it, because they don't know either. So the thing that kills me is the number of people over the last week who are on Kavanaugh's side, who keep repeating the same phrase over and over again, and it makes me want to punch them every time they say it, which is, oh, you know, just some unsubstantiated allegation isn't the kind of thing you ruin a man's life over. Nobody is ruining his fucking life, okay? The worst thing, his life is not hanging in the balance here. The only thing that is hanging in the balance is a huge promotion that he will either get or not. Not getting a promotion does not ruin his life. And in fact, they're not even talking about kicking him off the bench. If he doesn't get this job on the Supreme Court, he goes back to the federal bench. Oh, ruin my fucking life. I mean, come on. Are you serious with this ruining his life stuff? Stop it. That's the kind of hyperbole that leads to the thing that everybody constantly bitches and complains about, which is the, you know, this huge divide between us and how, you know, the right is all the way over here and the left is all the way over here and everybody's tribal. Yeah, you know why? Because we all pretend that everything is life and death and it's not.
You know, for the first time in maybe all of the time that we've known each other and worked together, that may be the first time you've done a Rob Ross rant.
It feels good.
Now you know why I have no blood pressure.
Yeah.
The thing is that you're talking common sense, and I'm not being flip in the least. I'm listening to you, and I'm listening to the exact thing that you're saying, and it's short, sharp, and to the point. People don't grasp short, sharp, and to the point.
Right.
They want hyperbole. They want avenues where they can paint a scenario that, in fact, they will turn into their form of truth.
Yeah.
Because people will believe what they want to believe, what they feel they need to believe, whatever it is. Right now, it is completely endemic of society in general on all sides of the political spectrum. You know, people have simply lost their sense of perspective,
yep,
their sense of calm. Nobody listens to one another. That's the first thing. You try and have a conversation of a political nature. It doesn't have to be my candidate versus yours, kind of just a general political conversation, and watch how inflamed everybody will get.
Yep.
Immediately.
Right. And if you say her story doesn't sound right to me, well, you're denigrating women and you're a misogynist and a woman hater. No, you know, I'm able to, you know, equate somebody's story and think, okay, Does that sound right based on my own experience? And then, you know, in her case, I don't know. I honestly haven't paid enough attention, but that's the kind of thing that if you say it, you'll get excoriated for. What?
But and take something else, though, with that. The new game is once you or me or anyone says something that somebody else doesn't like, they're going to go after you and try and ruin your life.
Right.
You know, take you away from a job, you know. It's frightening as it is just inherently psychotic. Yeah. I mean, the behavior, I don't want to say it's infantile because it's not. What it is, it's just, it's deranged and irrational beyond rational description, right, or attempting rational description or attempting a rationalization of all of this, because there is none. Society has thrown rationality out the window ever since 2015.
Yeah.
It began there with the announcement of Donald Trump running for president and people jumping on the Trump train. And then the march of the dunces afterwards.
Right.
The cavalcade of schmucks.
And you're going to have to remind me of her name. The Republican senator that everybody is looking at as a potential swing on Kavanaugh. Is Christine something?
I know who you're talking about. Her name escapes me. Susan something or other.
Yeah, Susan Collins.
That's it.
So she was on TV over the weekend because I guess initially the White House got the idea, okay, it's getting close to the midterms, so we have to be careful how we play this. You can't come off as a total dickbag when you're talking about the woman who's accusing Kavanaugh. And then at some point over the weekend, Trump apparently gave up on that and attacked the woman on Twitter. And so along comes Susan Collins, and you know they have her on one of the Sunday morning TV shows, and she's talking about how, oh, when I saw that tweet, I was appalled at what the president said. Bullshit. No, you aren't. If you were appalled at what the president said in a tweet, you've never read one of his tweets before. So don't play this game about how appalled you are. If you are, then you're an infant.
I think you just answered your own question, really. I mean, it's par for the course, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
This is the game that they're all playing because, you know, you get one of them, you know, in cahoots, if you will, or in bed or in league with anyone on their own side, in their own party.
Right.
They're going to bullshit everybody else. Then you're going to get the opposition coming in, you know, like kamikazes with the daggers drawn and ready for blood. There's a bloodlust right now in politics like I have never seen or imagined. You know, I think this is probably worse than the 68 riots in Chicago. At least it was a physical purging, if
right,
you will. This is just an out-and-out attempted obliteration.
Right.
You know? What is it gaining anyone? Honestly, what have we gained? What have we learned? What have we enlightened ourselves or elevated ourselves in any way, shape, or form, nope, ever since this all began?
No, not even a little. So, you know, so let's leave that behind, shall we? And move on to the next item.
Let's leave also behind the fact that the Jets lost to the Browns on Thursday Night Football, and that the Browns were favored. But at least the Bills won a game.
Yeah, that's right. Not only did they win a game, they just absolutely torched Minnesota. And it was nice to see a couple of things. And first of all, you know, everybody who's on my Bills fan, you know, blogs and pages and all of that stuff, they're all just creaming all over themselves right now going, oh, see, it's finally working and we're going to go 14-2 now. Pump the brakes, guys. Just hang on. I would love to see that. I would love to see that as much as any of you would. However, I did see some promising signs out of Josh Allen. And I mean, the offensive line is still terrible. The running game is still suspect. And the defense finally woke up. And I think that's an interesting thing because I mentioned this last week. Vontae Davis, when he quit at halftime, right after he quit, all of a sudden the defense started playing a whole lot better. I think they only gave up a field goal in the second half of that game after he left. So now all of a sudden the defense comes in. They force two fumbles on Minnesota's first two drives. deep in Minnesota territory, and they're just flying to the ball. They're playing like I haven't seen them play in years. But Allen himself, he completed a couple of passes that his arm strength and his accuracy, which has been highly suspect and highly questionable, all of a sudden he was on top of it, and he was making some throws that were very difficult. They weren't the ones that made the highlight reels necessarily, but they were important, difficult throws that kept drives alive. That's what I want to see out of a young quarterback, is the ability to do that, and he showed it a couple of times in Minnesota on the road. So
what I didn't like about Darnold's performance was that he looked lost on Thursday. Mm-hmm. He was making poor passes. He wasn't thinking about his place. He was just running and gunning, and that's not smart because it cost him a lot of turnovers.
Yep.
You know, and the Browns aren't that good either, frankly. You know, they are also equally suspect, and they also have a very young quarterback in Mayfield. So the Jets need to go back to the way they played in that first game with a lot of poise, because that's the one thing that Darnold had. Now, that was the opening game of the season, and yet he looked like a pro. You know, he looked like a vet. He seemed to be able to lead the team. That's what you are. You are the field general, you know, and he hasn't shown that in the Miami game or in the Cleveland game. Now, having said that, let's quickly move over to my beloved New York Mets, who – listen – they gave me a lot of heartache during this year. It was, you know, one loss after the other. Not just the games themselves, but the players,
yeah,
you know, getting hurt and just everything going wrong. But August and September, they've played their hearts out, and I really think that they can be a very dangerous team next year if everyone is healthy. If everyone is healthy, being the caveat, because they basically played a minor league team, and that minor league team has produced. And they just came out of a four-game series with the Washington Nationals and beat them three out of the four games, pretty impressively.
Yep.
And the Nationals, a team that everybody has vaunted for the last, what, 5 or 6 years at this point, of they're the ones to beat. You better believe they're the ones to beat, because you can beat them. They haven't won a single thing in the playoffs. They get to the playoffs and make an early exit. So I don't want to hear any more hype about the Nationals. As it is, they started gutting that team already, and they may lose the biggest prize in sport, Bryce Harper. And I wouldn't exactly mind seeing him in a Mets uniform, actually.
Yeah, how about that?
I like when he does play. This year has been very suspect. This is his walk year, and he's shown nothing. Like, you want to get that big contract, and yet he hasn't hustled. He's played with a sort of laissez-faire approach. So it makes you wonder, is he just tired of being in Washington, or is he playing hurt and just doesn't have it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, next rant of hockey. One, I heard that Brian Gionta retired today, so that's it for the Sabres.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's been a long and pretty storied career.
Yeah.
So he's hung it up. The Rangers won their first – now we're in preseason. The Rangers won their first preseason game in pretty impressive fashion over the Devils, because it was all kids and scrubs. And there weren't any of the regulars, maybe one or two in there. They won it in overtime with two goalies, two Russian kids who aren't even going to be on the team. You know, they're going to go to Hartford or wherever the minor league team is right now. They dropped 5 goals to Philadelphia, and they got – and I think another 5 goals to the Islanders. And guess who was in net for that? Henrik Lundqvist.
Oh, Henrik Lundqvist, of course, yeah.
So, therefore, tell me again about how wonderful and spectacular King Henrik is, that he can't even get his shit together in the preseason. I have a feeling, John, it's going to be a long, cold winter. I don't know why, but 2017 and 2018 are my years, maybe for karmic payback. So I have to suffer with my sports teams throughout. The Mets suck for these last 2 years. The Jets suck these last 2 years. And the Rangers are going to suck again because they sucked last year.
Yep. Well, so. And we've got some music to talk about this time around. And I'm going to kind of hand it off to you as far as this one is concerned, because I know there are some things that we're going to hold back for next week, but want to at least make mention of. One of the things that I'll make mention of right away that I will have the review next time we talk is I'm going on Wednesday night to go see the MC50 tour. The MC5 back out at it. Wayne Kramer is going to be taking the stage here in town on Wednesday night, and got my invitation to go check out the show today. So I will have a full review of that concert and how much they've got left in the tank after 50 years on the road. And we'll find out how the voice is holding up as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that, because that should be a fun show.
Yeah.
You know, with the fact that, you know, Wayne Kramer does seem to have a lot of fun when he plays. And like you were saying, you know, he knows where it's at.
Right.
And I think he takes a great deal of pleasure and pride in delivering the goods to the audience. So I think that should be pretty spectacular. So this week, what we're going to make mention is an upcoming brand new release from our dear friends Populux, an album called Lumiere, which I think I've listened to snippets of it. I haven't listened to it in total, but what I have heard so far is this is their most adventurous and probably their most serious, and I'm emphasizing the word serious, release yet. You know, the one thing that we love about them is that they've got that XTC poppiness about them, but I think this time Rob Shapiro's lyricism has gone into a very different, very powerful realm, and you get to hear the strength of his lyrical skills. Now, speaking of lyricists, it is with a great deal of pride and joy that next week we will go in depth about the new album by my favorite lyricist and most influential lyricist of all time, Mr. Paul Weller. His new album, True Meanings, is out now. I have it. You can get a really nice hardcover deluxe edition for $12.99 from Amazon. So you may want to check this out. It's a beautiful package. It's his newest release. It's a little bit more on a lower key than the last couple of records that were more rockin' and kind of fun and adventurous for him. This is a bit more taciturn and pastoral.
Huh.
You know, almost a mix of what he did with Wildwood and some of Stanley Road. Wildwood probably being my favorite album of all of his solo canon. Stanley Road not being one of them. For whatever reason, I never connected with that record. With me, it was always, this one sucks, this one's great. And so from the first solo album, it was like, meh. Then Wildwood came out, and it's like, my God, he's back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the warrior returning.
Yeah.
Then Stanley Road, which of course entered the charts at number one, and, you know, everybody fell over themselves with that album, and I just thought, it's okay. You know, You Do Something to Me is a good song, and Changing Man is a good song. The rest of it, I could live without. Heavy Soul, which was an album that a lot of people bitched about, right up there with Wildwood. That's, I still think that's probably his most balls-out record. As Is Now is pretty close, but yeah, those two for me are the ones that really killed it, Wildwood and Heavy Soul. But I'm really looking forward to sinking my teeth into this one. This is a nice autumn type record. I think that would be a perfect way of describing what we're going to hear.
Good. So, and again, perfect time of year to do it. So
that's upcoming. Now, the one that's actually up, and this is up on musictap.net because it's essential listening. This is an act called Jackson Automotive. It's the current project of a couple of New York-based musicians, Ed Stankiewicz and Arthur Schubach. And I know Ed from a band that I loved that he was in the late 80s, early 90s, a local band called the Melted Americans, who were definitely of that neo-psychedelic garage rock sound. Arthur Schubach has been in bands like Exploding Head, Oil Can Art, Donald and Lydia, whole bunch of things. And, you know, they got together and they did this, and it's what they describe as a blend of psychedelic folk, garage, and Americana. But believe me, it's a shit ton more than that. You know, they're kind of underselling themselves, which I appreciate them doing. First of all, both of them can write like nobody's business. They're great songwriters and singers. I'm just going to get right to the meat of the songs. I Was Only Asking, instant classic. You know, okay. It's very 60s-like. It's a lot of space in the production. Great guitar mix. There's some very McGuinn, Crosby, Clark, Hillman harmonies on this. You know, and there's a really effective Farfisa-sounding organ that's going underneath it. Now I'm resting. So it's kind of like framing the body with the rhythm section, you know, instead of overwhelming it or interfering with it, right? There's a track called Basement, which is, again, in that garage vein, but there's a tension to it, especially with the tempo and the rhythm. And it keeps it on a really tight leash, and it makes it really dark and powerful.
Okay.
Motel Queen. And this is the one kicker of the whole album. It's really great, very tasty 70s cock rock. You know, and I'm emphasizing rock. You know, with riffs that are heavy and little guitar noodles that punctuate the verses.
Raspberry style.
I love it. When you think of a song like Junior's Farm by Paul McCartney and Wings,
yeah.
And you get those little guitar noodles going in, you know, that's what this does.
Okay.
Right. There's a great song called She Knew, which is, as far as my mind's ear goes, all I could hear and feel was that kind of early, really early period REM, you know, the Chronic Town or pre-Chronic Town kind of chiming riffs and up tempo, and just like it just kind of motors right along and just leaves you in the breeze, you know. But the one track that really knocked me out was called The Falls. It's an acoustic pop song, and it doesn't sound like anything else on the album, you know, because it offsets the raucousness of all of the other tracks.
Okay.
It's very low-key and understated. It really just paints the widescreen abilities of this band than just doing neo, psychedelic, garage, rock, pop kind of landscapes. So the best thing I can say about this is go and listen to it. Go to musictap.net because the album is actually on there. You can hear the whole thing.
Excellent.
You start to stream the whole album in. Buy a copy. It's worth it to physically have it in your collection, you know. I highly recommend this one. This may be my favorite album this year. I'm happily surprised because it's late in the year and I would not have expected, you know, something so rich and moving. And I'm just really thrilled with this record. Jackson Automotive.
Excellent. Jackson Automotive it is, and musictap.net, so definitely going to check that one out. We've been looking forward to some new music, so as we're getting into the fall months, this is, as we said, definitely the time to do it. A couple of things. We'll go into TV because I've got some things to say about our continuing cord-cutting experiment. I made a big move this week, and before we get to that, TV patted itself on the back, or at least tried to, with the Emmy broadcast, and I have to say, I wasn't planning on watching. And yet we turned it on and could not look away because they started with a bit and, you know, with a song bit. And then they brought out the two hosts of the show. And most of the first 15 minutes before they gave away any awards was dedicated to the fact that the Emmys solved it, that because there were so many diverse read black and white and even Asian artists and creative people that were involved in the Emmy nominations, that they had fixed everything, that, oh, you know, race relations as far as the Oscars so white controversy from years ago was all better. And then they started to give away the awards, and it was another hour before they gave an award to anybody who wasn't white. It was hilarious.
Where does the Emmys place under the importance? Oh yeah, nowhere.
Yes, yes, indeed. But I just,
to you, John.
They set themselves up for it.
Not to interrupt, but those award shows, those are just the most, you either have to have a sense of humor or a really strong colon because you're just going to be so tight watching it.
Oh, yeah.
I vehemently refuse to ever sit down and watch an awards show because I find them all repugnant. Whether it's the Oscars, whether it's the Emmys, whether it's the Grammys, and I sure as shit would never watch any MTV awards.
Right, or the Golden Globes. Oh.
First of all, none of these matter, you know?
Right.
Not the Oscars. You know, to me, if it's the biggest box office draw, that's the win, you know? And meanwhile, how many of the biggest box office draws never won a thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love the excuse, and the Oscars uses this one a lot. Well, you know, a lot of these movies, they may not have been critically, or they may not have been box office successes, but, you know, they're really good, strong movies. And so, you know, people learn about movies like Philadelphia or, you know, whatever, based on the fact that these movies are nominated or win Oscars. Okay, so what you're saying is you need the Oscars to sell good movies to stupid people.
Which they're still not going to watch it anyway because they don't have an interest in it.
Right.
And the same thing applies to the pandering that they do at the Grammys. You know, and this was my breaking point. When they introduced SoundScan in 91,
yep.
The biggest album of the year, the album that sold more than anything else in 1991, fact, is Out of Time by R.E.M. That album held the number one spot for how many weeks? And somehow, Album of the Year went to Natalie Cole's duets with her dead father? No. And R.E.M. only walked away with, what, Best Alternative Performance? That's like giving the Grammy Award to Jethro Tull for Best Hard Rock Heavy Metal Performance. There is nothing heavy about Jethro Tull ever. The only thing that's heavy about Jethro Tull is the burden I've carried with that band because my cousin played me a passion play in 1973.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That is the one band, John, in my life that I could never stand, and I will never be able to meet with Mark halfway on this. He will, even at this point in history, he will come to New York to see them perform rather than call me and have dinner with me, his cousin, his best cousin. The closest thing he's got to a real brother, and go to see Jethro Tull, you know? Whereas Passion Play just set the tone right there for me. I can't stand Tull. Nothing personal, just can't stand them. But then again, I can't stand Styx or REO Speedwagon either. You know, sue me.
Then you're going to love In Our Heads this week. So before we get to that, you mentioned cousins, and that gives me the opportunity to update. Yes, my cousin did live through the hurricane. Yes, she did stay in Wilmington, North Carolina through the entire thing. Yes, she's kind of an idiot. And she got lucky. And after 3 days of waiting, we finally heard back from her that she had indeed survived. But most of her stuff was destroyed, which is what would have happened if she hadn't put her own life in jeopardy, too.
I have heard from Frank and his wife, Trish, that they're okay and the storm has passed. I don't know to what extent damage was done.
Yeah.
I haven't, but at least I know that they're all right, and that's what matters to me, that everyone's okay. So for that, I am thankful and happy and quite relieved. So, you know, that's, again, another Knockwood moment.
No doubt. But before we leave television entirely, there is something I wanted to get into because the one thing that has bothered me about this experiment in cord cutting is that even though most of what's out there in terms of network television is readily available via the networks for free streaming, yeah, you may have to wait a day. You may even have to wait a week for some stuff, but eventually it will get there. And I'm a patient guy. I don't need to see the new episode of The Big Bang Theory today. You know, I'm not that person. So that's fine. But there are some things that inexplicably are almost impossible to find legally via streaming. One of them is Jeopardy. And yes, it makes me 1,000 years old, but I don't care. I love Jeopardy. So I was either faced with, I can watch it and my wife can't, or we just didn't watch. And so for a couple of months, we didn't watch. Then I decided to do some poking around, and I found this thing. There's a few of them out there, but the one that I found is called a Tableau, and it's T-A-B-L-O. And I love it. So far, we've only had it for a couple of days, but what it is if you do the cord cutting deal, you have to go back with regular antennas. Remember antennas?
I do indeed. Now, are these the bunny ears or are these the out the roof and insert it?
Well, these are all indoor. They do still have those where you can put them outside and up on the roof and all of that to get better reception. But although the ones I've had are indoor, and up until now, we've had the ones that, remember the old FM antennas that used to come with your stereo that you never hooked up?
I still have it.
Right. And I love the fact that some people would make the big T or the big Y on the wall. It's like, that's not doing you any good. You could just ball it up and throw it behind the cabinet. It's just fine. Well, they have a similar thing for HDTV because television signals are FM anyway. So they have a thing that sticks on the wall. It's got little stickers on the back of it, and it's about a foot by 6 inches. It's just a little rectangle, and you stick it on the wall. What we moved to was, because we're out of town a little ways, we're about 45 miles from the center of St. Louis, so some of the stations didn't come in very well. But we got a new antenna, and this Tableau box, what it does is, instead of plugging the antennas into each TV, you plug it into the Tableau, and then it feeds that signal to every device you have. It feeds it to all of your TVs. It feeds it to your computer if you want, or your smartphone or whatever. You can hook it to as many devices as you want via their app. And it also acts as a DVR. So instead of having a TiVo or a DirecTV box or, you know, a cable box that acts as a DVR, this thing does it. The best thing about it, and the reason we went with a Tableau instead of any of the other ones, is that it doesn't have any internal memory. What you do is, it's got a USB port, and you plug an external hard drive into it, and it'll take any external hard drive. So if you need four terabytes of storage to store all your TV shows, you plug in a 4 terabyte hard drive, you're good to go. It's completely expandable, and it's the easiest thing in the world, and we only need one antenna. I love it.
Nice. But you're not able to watch Jeopardy, or you are?
I am now, because now I can record it, because the box, it automatically downloads for whatever area you're in, it downloads a guide. So you pull up the guide, and you tell it what you want to record.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And unlike TiVo, there's no monthly subscription fee.
Even better.
Yep.
My one statement on TV is, the new season of that show, The Deuce, has started. This is the second year. This is a show on HBO starring James Franco as twin brothers in the seedy heyday of the 70s porn scene.
Yes.
In New York City.
I've heard good things.
Well, the first season was really good, and it was really meticulous and well done. So far, the second season is just the opposite. It's sloppy, and I'm not digging it yet. I've sat through the first two episodes, and I'm remiss if I say I'm disappointed with it already, but I have a feeling that this won't go much further than this second season, because everything that it was with the first season, the way they – just the care and attention to detail, none of that's here, you know? I almost see it, God help me, turning into – vinyl,
you know? Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, so I'll reserve judgment till I've seen at least, you know, one or two more episodes. We're on week three now, but these first two have left me very cold.
One of the things that was, I don't know if it's a reason why we never watched it, but it's just one of those things that makes me not miss it, is the fact that Maggie Gyllenhaal does nothing for me. Nothing at all.
As my wife refers to, as old lady face.
Yes! Your wife is a genius. That's exactly right.
The minute she saw her, even in Secretary.
Yep.
You know? So, I don't know. She just seems kind of... She's not dynamic.
Yes. Yeah, she always seems bored with whatever she's doing.
Yeah, there's the sense of ennui or just completely out of her element.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I don't know why everybody's gaga for her, but okay. She's cute enough, but that's about it.
So yeah. Are we ready to get in our heads?
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's do it. And here's why you're going to hate me this week. So I will say this even before I tell you why you're going to hate me. I am going to give you the chance to let yourself up at the end. But earlier today, I got a notice that I was going to have to do the first hour of the guy's show who's on after me. So I thought, okay, an extra hour of radio, I can do that. I can do that with my hands tied behind my back in my sleep. But an interesting thing happened, because the producer of that show, as we were about to go on the air, said, "Hey, what do you want to open up with, man?" And I thought, well, just use Carney's theme. I mean, it's his show still, even though I'm here doing it, it's kind of his deal. And he was like, "Okay, but you can have whatever you want." And I said, "All right, fine, if I can have whatever I want, play me." And I told him the name of the song, and he said, "I've never heard of that, man." And I was like, "I know you've never heard of that, but trust me on this one, it's a good song." And the best thing about it was, about 20 minutes into the show, we start taking phone calls and get done with a call. And this one guy goes, "Hey, by the way, what was the name of that song you played at the beginning of the hour?" Now, I will tell you this. I love that. That is like handing me a gold bar. When I play something I dig and somebody goes, "Hey, man, what was that?" I think that is the coolest thing in the entire world. So now here's why we're going to Canada.
Oh shit!
because the song that I played was a song that Kim Mitchell, ex of Max Webster, did back in about 1983 called "Gopher Soda." Might as well go for soda. Nobody hurts and nobody cries. Might as well go for soda. Nobody drowns and nobody dies. And I love that song so much. And I, you know, I hadn't heard it in probably 5 or 6 years. And I just, it popped into my head when he asked me what I wanted to hear. And I was like, open up with Gopher Soda. And so what I want you to do, first of all, because I know how you feel about Canada, is talk about your top Canadian bands. Even in spite of yourself, there have to be bands that came out of that country, as protectionist as they are, that you still dig, because I know you cannot hate Neil Young.
Yeah, but he wasn't in a Canadian band. I don't hate Rush. I really don't hate Rush. I just didn't play D&D, and I wasn't a nerd that you know, was a virgin till he was 27 listening to Rush in his mom's basement.
Listening to The Trees by Rush. Yes, exactly.
God, I mean, I like Rush, you know. How can you look? I actually own a couple of Rush albums, believe it or not.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and as I've said on this show many a times, you know, I always smile whenever I hear, you know, Red Alert! That's classic, you know, but come on. Rush is a great band.
Yes.
Was a great band, sad to say. So, yeah, Rush, obviously. And Neil Young, I don't count him as being in bands, and he's never come off as much of a Winnipegian.
Right, and I don't know how many members of Crazy Horse, if any, are even Canadian. I don't know.
No, they're all from Laurel Canyon.
There you go, right.
You know, he just came down and never went back. You know what I mean? So, beyond that, Canada.
Keep in mind, Randy Bachman is Canadian.
Okay, you know, well, BTO. I like BTO. I don't love the Guess Who, but, you know, there's some good songs. The one song by them that irritates the shit out of me, that was Undone, because it's such a ripoff of the Zombies.
Yeah.
That they should have been sued. But at the same time, a song like Laughing was fantastic. You know, American Woman's a great song. Clap for the Wolfman's a great song, you know.
Now, I have to ask, because it's a little closer to our 80s heyday. How do you feel?
No, Bryan Adams.
No. Nobody likes Bryan Adams. Not even Bryan Adams likes Bryan Adams.
And do not bring up Sunglasses at Night.
No.
That's why I want to go to war with Canada.
I wasn't going Corey Hart either. No, I was headed toward the Tragically Hip.
You know, I actually met them once.
Did you really?
Yeah, they opened up for a band called the Waxing Poetics, who were from Norfolk, Virginia. They were the biggest band in Norfolk. So they were the headliners at this wonderful place called the Boathouse. And the Tragically Hip were very nice people. That's all I remember.
Well, they're Canadian. Of course they were.
Hey, listen, not every Canadian is really salt of the earth. Trust me.
Yeah. There's
a lot of sinister shit up there, you know. It's called Drake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is that.
Let's pull apart Aubrey Graham for a moment, shall we? Drake, the rapper. Aubrey Graham, guess what he is? He's a Jew. He's a bar mitzvah boy. He went to yeshiva, for fuck's sake.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And more importantly, he was Jimmy the Cripple on Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Oh,
now,
that's right.
You remember Degrassi Junior High like I remember Degrassi Junior High. The best band that ever came out of Canada was the Zit Remedy.
Yes. But, you know, when it comes to the, like Kim Mitchell, like I said, and Max Webster, before he went solo, Max Webster did some interesting stuff. The Kings did some interesting stuff. So, you know, there were bands
that was a band with a lot of promise with that, because we had that conversation about switching to Glide.
Yep.
This Beat Goes On, which is still, I think that's possibly the last great anthem.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, in Red Rider, how can you not like Lunatic Fringe? But yeah, it's a lot of that stuff got played up there. And, you know, there was a radio station. There were two of them. There was CFRB and CFNY. And one of them was News Talk and the other one was Alternative. But I always screw up which one was which. And so they had the Canadian content rules. So 10% of every hour had to be Canadian artists. So we got a lot of that stuff. And we'd hear songs like Switch and a Glide and The Beat Goes On. And we'd hear, you know, Max Webster and all of these bands, because they had to, by law, you know, play a certain amount of that stuff. And that's, you know, Rush got a ton of that stuff as well. But
I just got it. The greatest Canadian band of all of them. The Edward Bear.
The Edward Bear. Yes.
Shit. I mean, last song is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Right.
And I'm saying that in absolute seriousness. How could I overlook that?
And I'll tell you, there was one that I ran into completely by accident, because I was looking for a song to play. We used to do a segment that was a news segment, and we'd pull out all these weird news stories, and we'd have, you know, have music introing all of the stories that had some connection to it. And there's a song called Hello Time Bomb by a band called the Matthew Good Band. And I heard that song, and it is just an ass kicker of a tune. It really is. Devils on roller skates, down at the roller rink, picking up chicks for me, ones that push and push and push till it hurts, push and push till it hurts. And that's another one of those bands nobody's ever heard of. But the Matthew Good Band is actually really some talented guys.
You know, let's not discount DOA, who are still one of the best punk bands ever.
Yeah.
Annihilator was a great heavy metal band.
Right.
Especially in their first incarnation with the now late Randy Rampage on bass. Even though he had been in DOA and suddenly he's playing metal playing bass in a metal band.
Right.
There was a pretty decent, I'm saying decent, band called 5440. They sprung up in the late 80s, mid to late 80s. I think they might have been on Warner Reprise, I think. You know, I remember hearing them a couple of times and thinking, not too bad.
Right, yeah, and they also got tagged with that alternative label before it was hip to do. But, you know, and one of the other ones, sort of the perennial rock bands from up there that we haven't even mentioned yet is Triumph. And Triumph, I think they benefited probably more than a lot of them did from those Canadian content rules, because I always thought they were solid, but I would never... I never reach for them. I never think, you know what I could go for right now is some Triumph.
What about Anvil?
Yeah. Been a while, yes. But here's where I let you up, and you've already done some of it, because you hacked on Bryan Adams, and you hacked on Drake, certainly, who is well-deserving of it, and Corey Hart. But, I mean...
I didn't hack on Anne Murray.
I was going to say, even if we have to go to Anne Murray, who are the Canadian bands that you just can't stand, even if it's hip not to like them, like the Bare Naked Ladies?
Ew, you just made... Ooh, you just typed... Holy shit. Damn you. Damn your black and tattered soul to hell. Unbelievable. You know what? I think I probably loathed them the most, because I just found them to be beyond irritating. I hate smarmy. You look at this. We're cutesy funny.
It is you're awfully not, cutesy, yes.
You're not funny. You're not clever. You're not witty. You're a bunch of fat dicks, okay? Fuck all of you. I'm sure you're very nice people, but fuck you as a band.
Honeymoon Suite?
What?
Honeymoon Suite?
Was it?
Honeymoon Suite.
I don't really know them.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. They had a hit once. But.
A hit. There you go. Listen, Dickie Goodman had a hit once.
Right.
Know? Actually, twice.
Yeah,
affiliations with Canada.
Honeymoon Suite's hit was New Girl Now. A bell at all?
No, because when you were reeling off those lyrics, I kept thinking about that song by the Producers.
Oh yeah,
what he got that I ain't got. He's got you. I just heard that yesterday, actually, in the car. That's a great one. The Producers out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes.
They also had that goofy song "She Sheila." What, you know? I was trying to think. Are there any other Canadian acts? But no, you know, if there are, then I don't want to give them the time of day because there's just no need for that.
That's right.
It's just gratuitous hostility.
And I don't even consider Celine Dion Canadian. She's Quebecois, and that's something else entirely.
First of all, Celine Dion is just a hellspawn, so
right.
No. She gets no time.
All right, and we'll also leave Chilliwack out of the conversation. So,
you really didn't need to go there. I was hoping you could escape that. I was going to say it, but I didn't want to say it, but you had to go and say it.
All right, well, listen, we'll let you up because you've had enough this time. Rob Ross, always a pleasant conversation,
my friend.
Huh?
Jesus Christ. What am I, Tom Petty? Let me up. I've had enough.
That's where I was going with that. Well done.
I have a heart attack. No, sorry. A drug overdose in 5 minutes? Get massive coronary and find out that I OD?
That's right. Well, you know, if you can't start a Twitter war with Eddie Murphy before Twitter exists, what can you do? Have a brilliant week, my man. And as I said, we'll have the MC5 review next time around. We got all kinds of great music stuff coming up on the next Radio City. And I hope you have a killer weekend. You know, I don't even know who the Bills play this week, but if it's not the Jets, then I hope the Jets win.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think I may need to take a week off from sports somehow. Maybe actually play my guitar and do something constructive.
Yeah, how about that? But
in any event, have a wonderful week. Have a great time at the show. And yes, indeed, we will catch up next week. Reconvene. Got a lot of great music, a lot of things going on. And, you know, as per usual, you know, if the floodwaters don't carry us away, we'll be here. So have a great week, brother. I'll see you later.